afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody. Hello and welcome to an already jovial Rock Solid. I'm Pat Francis.
I'm Gary Lucy. Over there is
Matt Belknap, producer.
And we are in San Francisco for the San Francisco Sketch Fest.
Coming to you live from the basement of the Embarcadero Center.
That's right, from the Club Quarters Hotel. Matt's idea was to do a podcast while we're in San Francisco. And so we thought, well, we need to get a guest. We need to get someone that is quintessential San Francisco.
Somebody big. But not too big.
Not too big that he wouldn't come on our show.
Right.
Somebody small, but not too small.
So we got the gentleman that's talking, and his name, Gary, tell everybody.
I'm so excited. It's Greg Kinn.
It's Greg Kinn, everybody.
Right here to my right. Oh,
and we are ready to have a Kinnversation. Can I say that?
That's we got.
All right.
Right. Let's start the Kinntroversy now.
Oh, man.
Greg.
You know, it goes. Once you start those puns, they never stop. So let's just cut them right there.
Good call.
I wanted to at least get one out because I want to talk. We want to talk about the naming of some of the albums. And who was that your idea?
Well, let me tell you, it happened organically.
Okay.
You know, this is Berserkly Records.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent three quarters of the day smoking weed, the other quarter of the day planning what to do when we weren't smoking the weed. So we had put the first one was called Greg Kinn. And then was like, okay, well, the second album's coming out. What do you want to call it? And everybody was, well, Greg Kinn again. And then the third album came out. It's like, well, we need another name. How about Next to Kinn? And by this time, we'd created a monster.
Right.
And it became a thing. I mean, geez, we must have done a million of them.
I know.
And,
it's crazy.
There were two albums that I absolutely, positively refused to do the Kinn pun on. And Glass both House of Rock. Those albums stiff.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, all right, smart guy. What else you got?
Got to give the people what they want.
Right, Glass House Rock. Pete Townsend put out an album the same year called Glass.
Empty Glass.
Empty Glass. Right. And we were thinking of combining them as an Empty Glass House Rock. So, but, you know, I went right back to Kinn, and wouldn't you know it, the record sales begin to double and quadruple, and I don't know why.
So then if it works, don't fix it.
It's good that you had that contingency plan.
Yes.
Oh, here we go.
You see how it works.
Oh, man.
Now, you got a triple word score for that one because it was long and it was right in the middle of the board.
Now, Greg, only because you just brought up Glasshouse Rock, I have to say, that's a phenomenal album that is available on iTunes right now, and I do actually have a great tune from Glasshouse Rock queued up. So let's hear let's hear about 30 seconds of this song. This is Small Change.
Oh, nice.
Well, you may never try to get upset, but me, I must be different because I don't forget. It hurts me when you lie. It makes me wonder why I'm standing on the back street of a lost goodbye. It ain't fair. It's a treacherous lie. It'll turn your heart to get it if you don't know why. I don't care what the wise men say. If you only got nothing, no one can take it away. Small change.
Small change.
In my pockets tonight.
Awesome.
Yeah, that is Small Change.
Beautiful,
that is an excellent song.
Power pop. That's
wow.
Yeah.
That's what's great about Greg's career. Like, on the national stage, a lot of people didn't know you until the breakup song.
Yeah, right. Which was our
seventh album.
Yeah, really, that would never happen.
Never happened to me.
That's like REO Speedwagon with High Infidelity as their 10th album.
Oh, okay.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Now, the beauty of this whole deal, guys, is that like about a year ago, after long years of legal wrangling, I got the rights back to all of my stuff. So we're re-releasing all of the entire catalog in chronological order.
Nice.
And this month, or this week, we just re-released Rock and Roll, which is probably, you know, the signature album for the GKB.
That's right.
But, the fans are digging it because now they can get it again.
Yeah.
Stuff's been out of print since the early Paleozoic era.
Oh, yeah. Power Pop fans, we were paying $100, $200, you know, when you could find them.
I know.
You know, for these.
Yes, and I saw a copy of Rock and Roll on eBay for $399.
What? The CD.
Yeah.
I know.
I would have bought it for myself, but no, that's a joke.
So is it ever going to come out? Are they ever going to come out physical copy? It's all digital.
Well,
2013.
We put the best of as a physical CD. And, you know, the future's pretty open. I mean, this has all been digitally re-released now through iTunes and wherever else music is downloaded. But, you know, I could definitely see some of these things. You know, I think it's a matter of demand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the same situation coming up. I got a book that I'm publishing. The published date is September 3rd. It's called Rubber Soul. It's about the Beatles. It's really
cool.
A fictional work about the Beatles in a murder mystery.
Oh,
it's really neat. It's really different. I've never read anything like it. But, yeah, we're putting that thing out. And, like, the book company is saying, well, it's kind of an E. It's a digital publisher.
Yeah.
Premier Digital Publishing. But they also, what they do called print on demand, where they'll print 1,000 or 2,000 copies. They sell those. They print another 1 or 2. Back in the old days, man, we didn't know what we were doing.
No.
Are you kidding me? You know, I told you what we did 3/4 of the time, and the rest of it, we had so much fun. And that was the other thing about making this album. I just have great memories. I loved, you know, my guys in my band, Gary Phillips, no longer with us, Dave Carpenter, also gone. And those guys were fabulous to work with in the studio. We had so much fun. That was recorded at Fantasy Studios in Berkeley, just across the bay. And we were in the side room, Studio C, which was the room, they called it the room that Creedence built.
Is that where they recorded all their hits?
And all, like, Proud Mary, you know, Green River, all those great hits were recorded in the same room where the breakup song was recorded.
A lot of good vibes in there.
Yeah, real good vibes. And you had your own entrance to the street. Because it was in the back of the building. So you could just open the door and you're out.
Nice.
You know what I mean? It was great for going out and, you know, smoking things, and hanging out. And then you didn't have to go past the security guard at 3 a.m.
That's excellent. Now, the album's too, produced Matthew King Kaufman. Is he still with us?
He's still with us. And Joel Turtle here was Matt's partner in Berserkly Records.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, we still are kind of a family outfit here. And Joel was the guy, really, that had the vision of, like, let's be able to put the old stuff out. Because, you know, when you have grandchildren, you're into legacy building, right? You know, and I'm thinking, you know, Keith Richards was like that last week. Yeah, is this all legacy building, man? This legacy.
It's pretty secure, I think.
Speaking of Keith Richards, you've opened for the Rolling Stones.
Yes, I have.
And any backstage stories you can tell us?
Oh, jeez. How much time do we have?
Well, give us the best one.
Do you want prophylactics or you want it raw?
What was it like? Because that was a stadium tour.
Yeah.
So what was it like performing in front of that many people?
The first time I walked out on a stage in front of 80,000 people.
Wow.
It was debilitating. I mean, I took about 4 steps out there, and then I couldn't move my legs. My throat seized up, and I just looked at it. It was like, hi, hello, everybody. It's Mike and Wade for me. So we realized, I think, about a third of the way through the set that we wanted to see the Stones as much as the audience wanted.
Right.
So we were hurrying our set to get the hell off so they could play.
You guys are playing like the Ramones. You're doing all your songs in 30 minutes.
Oh, geez. One time the Ramones opened for us back at the Keystone Berkeley.
Wow.
You
want
to hear a story?
That does not sound like a good double bill to me.
It was right at the beginning. I think they just put out the first album.
Uh-huh.
And everybody wanted to see the Ramones. Everybody been reading about, you know, we'd seen Devo and Blondie, and let's see the Ramones. So they showed up at 9 o'clock. The doors opened at 9 o'clock at the Keystone. Usually the first band on went about 11, and the headliner going around midnight.
So wait, no sound check for the Ramones?
Nothing. They came in there. They were whacked out of their skulls. They set up their equipment in record time. At 9 o'clock to 9:20, they played a furious set in front of the bouncer and one guy that was like sweeping up. Then they tore all their shit down and said, "Look, here's our contract. Pay us. We're out of here."
That's right. Sniffing glue and counting to four. And that's what you
get. One, two, three, four. And it was a brilliant show, I understand, but in front of two people.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you stick around for the audience? I don't know.
Now,
I do love the Ramones.
Yeah, I said that wasn't a good double bill. I love the Ramones and I love Greg Kinn. I just don't know if those two bands go together.
We played with everybody in the day. We played with Patti Smith. We would open for Patti Smith doing poetry. How do you open for poetry?
I don't know.
You do a lot of talking is what you do.
You guys kind of had one foot in like New Wave a little bit and one foot in
Power Pop. Do you like Power Pop? Do you mind that term?
I don't
pop
mind. You know, Berserkly was the real true first independent label of the modern era.
Absolutely.
I mean, Stiff and all that stuff, they followed.
Yeah.
And when Berserkly first came in, and you know, Joel will tell you, because we fancied ourselves like Sun Records. You know, we were a little tiny label.
Right.
We didn't have
Home of the Hits.
Exactly. It was a joke. Home of the Hits was a joke. And I remember distributing that record out of the back of Steve Levine's VW bus.
That's the way it was done.
I shrink wrapped my first album.
That's crazy.
Now think about that. I shrink wrapped my own first album.
How expensive was a shrink wrap machine back then?
I think it was about $2,000, man. And they had one at Rather Ripped Records where I had my day job.
Oh my God.
And I'd go up in there after hours, you know, 3 a.m, me and Gary Phillips up there, whacked out of our skulls, shrink wrapping Berserkly Chartbusters and the Modern Lovers and the first Greg Kinn album, because if we didn't do it,
who was gonna?
Nobody was.
Rubidoos. They were great.
Rubidoos, we did all of that.
Well, I think it's amazing. From 1976 to 86, you release an album every single year.
Yeah.
That's the way it was done back in the day.
That was the way it was done. That's part of it was, you know, we were playing all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, you could still get FM airplay in places like Cleveland and Cincinnati and go fly in, play a club there.
That's cool.
And it was really good. So I kind of look back on those Berserkly days. They were the funnest days, man. That was a wonderful, wonderful time to be in the record business. It's completely different now.
Yeah.
But back then, it was like the Wild West.
Now, you mentioned your record store career briefly, because that's what's always struck me about you, is you always seem like somebody who was like a music fan.
I was a record store clerk. That was me. You know, that goofy guy that you, hey, what, you know, what's the second Amon Duel album? Oh, Birth Control. It's right over here.
You guys always play cool covers. You put cool covers on your albums.
In record stores because I always liked records. I just liked being around them.
Gary,
when I was a teenager, I used to do that.
Gary, you and I both worked in record stores also. Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
National Record Mart.
Because we couldn't play music.
That's because we couldn't play music. There's also those dudes.
Yeah.
The guys that love it but can't play it.
Yeah.
What do you want to play? You know, you got your guitar.
I got a guitar right here.
What are you going to do for us?
Should we do a medley of my hit?
Why not?
My medley of my hit.
Is this in tune? Yeah, tell me, you're a musician. Hold on, I got to take these off to get this thing tuned.
All righty. We'll wait. We're happy to.
This is a very expensive Martin guitar. I want you to know.
Beautiful. Look at that thing.
It's the only decent one I got. I'm known as a bad guitarist. Did you know that?
Look, bad guitarists are successful.
That doesn't sound right. This is all live, too.
Yeah. We're not editing this out.
We're like the dead.
This reminds me of that you were talking about Ravi Shankar before, and like Greg was. And when he first played in the States, the band came out and tuned up. And like when they were done, the band, you know, the crowd goes crazy because they weren't, they didn't know like right. Indian repertoire. And he's like, we were just tuning up, but yeah. we hope you enjoyed the songs too.
I don't know what Greg's worrying about. The Ramones don't tune up.
Exactly.
They're yeah, and you know what? I've played enough times with the Grateful Dead where the first song is that old tuning up.
The tune up. That's
and,
awesome.
I mean, they could go on for 20 minutes.
Until they get it right.
We'd broken up for good just an hour before. This is the Sinatra version. I just want you to know. This is the Rat Pack version. And you can wag your. I'm sailing out of the sea, out of the cold floor. Cause they don't write them like that anymore. They just don't write them like that anymore. We've been living together for a million years. And it feels so strange out in the atmospheres. Then the band slowed the tempo. The music took me down. The same old song with the melancholy sound. Cause they don't write them like that anymore.
Tell my mic to clap.
Good for that.
Thank
awesome.
You.
Greg, Ken. Greg, I have a really obscure question about the breakup song.
Uh-oh.
Now, same old song with the melancholy sound. On the live version they'd always play on MTV, for you pronounce it on the same old song with the melancholy sound.
Melancholy.
My friends, we argued so much about the correct pronunciation. Is there a story behind that, or are you just fucking around?
You know what? The story was I was probably whacked out and just... You know, sometimes you say like that. Yeah, it's a melancholy sound. And it's quite possible that I was trying to say melancholy and failing.
It just wasn't coming out.
Sometimes the lips don't do what the mind tells them to do.
Right.
But a lot of people thought that they were hearing lyrics in there like, they just don't came out as bitches don't.
Bitches don't.
Bitches don't. Bitches don't. And I'm thinking,
agree. Let's agree. Bitches that's don't. Right? You know, all right.
But I digress. You know, that song, I had only written half the lyrics to. So I literally, in the studio, under pressure, with everybody watching me, completely made up the whole beginning of it.
Wow.
And I was throwing in the uh-uhs.
Just, like a placeholder.
I thought it was like it was a placeholder. Oh. I always thought there'd be lyrics, you know. We had broken up for good just an hour before, and then instead of
I can't find my keys.
Yeah, that was just across the door. Now I can't find my underpants. I'm going some more. There were supposed to be words in there, and now I look back, and obviously the was the hook.
Yeah,
because I walked down the street. In places like Tokyo and Bangkok, yep. And people point at me and go, "Oi, the guy! I love the I love you!" And they get into this. Goes in any language.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Also, I might point out that "woo" goes in any language as well,
true.
Especially popular among the Germans and Swiss. But I tell you, in Asia, I'm the man. You know what I mean? And
there's worse. Better to not be the man, right?
Well,
there's worse things to be known for. I wish we all had that one.
No, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
To be known for something anywhere of any kind,
right?
To have any kind of a thing.
Totally.
You know, I look back on my on my career. I was thinking about, I'm a writer now, and I wanted to write my autobiography. I didn't know what the hell to put in there. I mean, should it be 100 blowjobs I have known? What should it be? Backstage hijinks? How I turned my life around? The Betty Ford Clinic receptionist name is Thelma. The road to rock and roll heaven is paved by the bleached skulls of guys like Greg Ginn. So it's really hard to, I don't have an ending yet. I'm hoping that there'll be one of these Bobby Darin endings. Right. Oh, yeah, he came back. He was doing Mac the Knife, and then he was doing Simple Song of Freedom. So there'll be an ending for it, and then I'll be able to write my biography.
Yeah, as guys in our 40s, yeah. I think fading away is just fine. It's not better to burn out.
Yeah.
Contrary to what
I agree.
No, I agree with you. And you know what? They say that living well is your best revenge. Mm-hmm. Living well in Hawaii is your best revenge. They don't even know your address there.
Yeah.
They can't even send you a postcard. That's what I said. Where do I have a Greg Ginn? I don't know.
No, you're no
Dylan. He's living in Hawaii now. It's the last I heard of. Topless.
Now, you write, you have quite a few books to your credit, right?
Yes, I do.
You have a horror novelist of some acclaim.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah, and you know what? To me, when I was growing up, and I don't know if this is just a geek thing or what, but I loved horror movies.
Yeah, me too. I still do.
I loved the crappy 50s B movies, the black and whites.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I would stay up and watch Creature Features every Saturday night, every without fail. In my town, we had a guy... we didn't have Vampire or Svengoolie or anybody. We had kind of a third-rate guy.
Yeah.
Here in the Bay Area, we had Bob Wilkins.
In the Pittsburgh area, we had Chili Billy. Chili Billy Cardell.
There were guys all over the country.
Yeah.
And you know what? That was a really cool job to have.
I would think so.
At 2 in the morning, down at the station, there's nobody around, and you're playing, Daughter of Dracula.
I know. It's awesome.
Anyway, I wrote a book. The book was called Horror Show. It was my first novel. It was nominated for the Bram Stoker Award.
Nice.
Oh, yes. It was nominated for the Bram Stoker.
What does that award look like? Is it a cross? Is it a stake?
Giant
what is that?
Penis with a big pen.
It's a giant penis.
Anyway.
It's controversial.
It is.
I wrote this book, Horror Show. It was my first horror book. And it was a straight up horror. It's about a guy who's the worst filmmaker in the world, kind of an Ed D. Wood.
Yeah. Sure.
And instead of using made-up zombies, he's using real dead bodies because they look so much better.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
So he goes down to the morgue, and he gets some really decayed bodies, and he manipulates them. That's how he makes his horror movies.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like marionettes.
Yeah, exactly.
Dead marionettes.
Anyway, one of my ideas back then was to make them into movies. Uh-huh. I had already written the screenplay for Horror Show, and I wrote the theme song, and this is the theme song.
Oh, here we go. Oh, this is great.
Horror Show.
Is this a debut? Is this an exclusive?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And I would think that the weirdness of having nice finger picking, pretty, Paul McCartney singing Yesterday for the Chainsaw Massacre.
Right.
That's what the effect I'm looking for. Yes. Sometimes life is like a horror show. Bela Lugosi am I. And as I look into this horror show, I don't understand why. Nothing seems to matter. And nothing seems to change. And nothing makes a difference, be it ever so strange. Sometimes life is like a horror show. Boris Karloff is gone, And now I see the angry villagers. They say the monster must die. And as the moon is rising, and midnight rolls around, keep a candle in the window, 'cause I'm homeward bound. Sometimes life is like a horror show. Bela Lugosi am I. Bela Lugosi am I. Bela Lugosi am I. Bela Lugosi, Lugosi.
Oh my God, this is beautiful.
Excellent.
Incredible.
Now, is that, that's not on any Greg Kinn album, or is it?
Yeah, no, actually it is. It's on the Horror Show album.
Oh, okay.
Which was put out the same year as the Horror Show novel.
Oh, okay.
They just never had babies together.
Okay. Right?
Love theme from Horror Show. That's
a, yeah, the love theme from Horror Show.
Excellent. You are in fine voice. That's,
you know, I'm getting ready to do my audio book.
Oh, nice.
For the new book, the one I was telling you about, the Beatles novel. It's a fiction thing. But I got to get a voice coach, because I can do a kind of an English accent, but I can't do Liverpool.
Right.
I can't, like, you know, the way the Beatles talked to me was magical. And it was Liverpool. It was completely different from London. So I need to find somebody out there that can coach me. So when I read the book and I do the audio book, I can do all the Liverpool parts really good.
How about McCartney?
Yes, McCartney.
Let's give him a ring. Do it. What's he doing?
Oh,
he's got nothing.
She's probably just hanging around.
Yeah, hanging around.
I have another, like, totally random question. And this might just be an urban legend. I remember reading once upon a time, did your cat was a big star in commercials? Is that true? Did you ever?
Oh, God, man, that was a long time ago. Yeah. I was married to a model.
Oh, okay.
Rock and roll stardom.
You have to look in your guidebook. I had a number one record.
Right.
I was married to a model. Good. I lived in a mansion. I drove a Porsche. I was doing tons of blow. She was nuts, and she looked at everything we had as a model. Oh, that slug would be lovely. And I'm like, let's get a National Geographic spread on that slug in the garden, honey. So she had it in our mind, and our puppies and our everything that we owned was a model. She had a modeling agency. I'm taking them down to see Charles. You know, Charles is the guy that books the black cats, don't you know? Oh, they had a guy that booked the tiger cats and puppies, mean dogs. You know, I had friends that were bouncer types, but they would model out. They had an agency, and get what the agency was called.
What was it called?
Grotesques.
Grotesques.
Yes, we specialize in grotesques. So if you need Quasimodo, call.
Now, how long did that marriage last, Greg? Can I ask you that?
Well, you have to look in your guidebook.
Okay.
I think it's 3 years.
All right.
Now I think it was two.
Two. That sounds about right.
Let me tell you another thing. Every time I move to L.A., I get divorced. I don't know if it works for any other guy, but I moved down there. I'm divorced within 3 months. And I moved into Woodrow Wilson Drive. You would think, what bad thing could happen on Woodrow Wilson Drive? You're up at the top of La Cienega there, and you're thinking to yourself,
nice cul-de-sac.
Oh, yeah. I think we lasted 2 months there.
My friend Todd says moving to L.A. married is like going to Disneyland and bringing your own rides.
Bring sand to the beach.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, don't bring sand to the beach. plenty of gals there. You can.
I want to jump into. MTV and the success of Jeopardy.
Yeah, well, that certainly made a big dent.
Because you couldn't turn MTV on without seeing Jeopardy.
Jeopardy was played, I believe, every 15 minutes there in 1983. And I'll tell you the truth, it really made the record a hit. Here's how it happened. We had done the video for Jeopardy. Joe Day directed it. And Joe was the kind of guy I saw was like leaning away. Yeah! And then... sorry. And he had made it into... You know, we had a big conference one day. Uh-huh. We sat around a big table and kicked around ideas. And Joe kept saying, what are you into? And I didn't know what I was into. I said, well, I don't know. I'm into old horror movies. Perfect. So the next time I come... and see Joe again, he's got a treatment for this Night of the Living Dead horror movie, right, for Jeopardy, which was semi-autobiographical because I was just breaking up with my first wife at
marriage
the time.
As a horse.
I know.
Yeah. And a lot of people thought that it was the real shots of my wedding in there. No, they weren't. That wasn't – that. They were just shot on Super 8 to look like that. But we cut the video, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We did it at a Mission Dolores Catholic Church, downtown San Francisco. Same church was used in Bloody Harry. Remember when the priest comes out and the guy's up on a hat and he's got the sniper rifle?
Yeah.
That was it. And that little park across the street. So, and by the way, I don't know who was in charge of letting...
Do you mean Dirty Harry?
Yeah, Dirty Harry.
You said Bloody Harry.
Anyway.
Oh, no.
And I was sitting here, and I'm like, that's an obscure horror film I've never heard of.
Rip off.
Dirty Harry. Okay,
Dirty
cool.
Harry. God, how did I get that one wrong?
Well, you're always thinking about horror and blood.
Yeah.
And killing that ex-wife of yours.
Yeah, right. Well, let's breast on here.
Okay.
He had chosen this thing, and I know in my heart, guys, that I'm going to hell for the things I did in that church after hours.
Oh, no.
We did a three-day shoot where Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, straight through. We had a little Winnebago for a dressing room.
Wow.
And it was like a Cheech and Chong movie. You'd open the door to Winnebago, smoke would come billowing out. There's chicks in there doing big gaggers and stuff. And people are chugging beers. What do you need? We need Greg. What party, Greg, do you need? We need his head. It'll be right out. And we did it and I remember to this day how insane.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got so ripped out of our guts. So getting high and doing videos was one of the things they never told you. Motley Crue will never tell you how much fun they had making their video,
right,
because they were whacked out. That's it. You go, hey, we're doing a video Thursday. What does that mean to you? Well, I better go out and get an ounce of pot and like 4 or 5 grams of blow and a case of beer because that's what we're doing. And it was really I remember the video for Reunited was a takeoff.
Yes, it was a sequel video.
It was a sequel. Well, they all were linked in some way, and it started where the other one ended in the sports car, and it was a takeoff on Wizard of Oz. We had real Munchkins that we hired from a real Munchkins union. These people work all the time.
It's hysterical.
So at some point, and our guy, just to show you the advanced stage of partying in my band at that time, the 84, that was the peak year, right?
Right.
For partying. My guys were wearing, one guy was the Cowardly Lion. He had a full lion's head on. One guy was the Tin Man. And they had very elaborate Hollywood costumes that took 5 or 6 hours to get into.
Great. Wow.
And the makeup. And of course, then it was the Scarecrow. And
yep.
So my bass player, Steve, he was the Cowardly Lion. You know, he couldn't go all day without doing some blow. So he had the guy build these straws into his mask.
Oh,
so he's got this lion mask with these two little coming out. And then, you know, he would do a take and be like, all right, that's a keeper. And he just walked back into the dressing room. Let's go back.
Now, if you saw that in a movie, you wouldn't believe it. But this is a true story.
Yes, built into the mask. And I thought that was rather ingenious.
And then afterwards, he's like, if I was the king, he was ready to go.
God, we had so much fun doing that. Oh, jeez.
Let me, I want to play a little bit of Reunited. This is from 84. This is from Contagious.
That's
let's
good
hear
rocker
a little
too.
Bit of this.
Available on iTunes.
suck, took about 5 minutes to write. You know, after the reunited with my baby part, the rest was just real easy. You know, funny story about shooting that video. I told you that we had hired Munchkins, about 20 or 30 of them.
Are they getting high? Are the Munchkins getting high?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Munchkins, takes less blow dirty. For them, right?
Oh, they're
Munchkins are dirty.
They'll hump your leg. So anyway, Gary Phillips, who's the Keith Richards of my group at the time.
Okay. Is that good or bad?
Well, it's a little bit. I think it's a little bad.
Okay.
It's probably good in the right circumstances. Anyway, he's out there, and we're doing like take number 79, you know. And you Munchkins were out of position. And then Gary goes, well, that's it. And until these Munchkins, somebody tell these midgets to get it together. See? He was a New York guy. So this guy, this little, the head of the Munchkin come over to Gary, and he kicks him in the shin real hard. He goes, it's little people, you asshole, little people. And Gary goes, hey, somebody get this midget off of me, man. Get him off of me. He's hurting me. So they drag the guy out. The midgets walk out in force.
Do they drag him or do they toss him?
They left. It was like, we're not working for you anymore. So all the Munchkins left. Oh. And we had to get children, the children of the people in the chute, to come over at like 3 a.m. Hey, could you bring little Bobby over at 3? And we got costumes over here. Oh, just come on down. And if you look at that video carefully, in the last shot, you'll obviously see that they are no longer Munchkins, but they are actual children.
Man. That must have been like hippy dippy trippy then when you're watching. You're like, wait a minute, man.
Spinal Tap.
I'm going to check that out tonight on YouTube.
Write that book. You got to write that bio.
The bio's going to be good. I'll tell you some of the stuff that happened on that shoot, but I don't think you guys would.
Our hearts.
I think you'd probably throw me out.
I want to touch on other things that you've done. You performed on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, that was great.
Because there's a lot of bands that haven't ever performed on Saturday Night Live,
right?
And Greg Kinn Band did.
Which era was that?
That was season 10, show 18, and the cast was Billy Crystal.
Oh, okay, that year that was.
Howard Cosell was the host.
Nice. Howard Cosell was the host. Now I got to tell you. To me, back in those days, Howard was one of my idols.
Sure. Uh-huh.
I loved Howard. I loved him on Monday Night Football. Yeah. I loved his Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali stuff. Mm-hmm. He was there for the Thriller in Manila. So, and nobody hung with Howard. Apparently, he was such an unpleasant guy that he had a dressing room about the size of this one directly across the hallway from my dressing room. And the doors were open. I could see, hey, Howard, what are you doing? He drank Old Granddad.
Nice.
I'm in here drinking Old Granddad. And I come in, okay, I'll sit down and watch ice hockey with you and drink Old Granddad. And we spent the whole week doing that.
Fun.
But he never left the Howard Cosell. He was always, like, I brought him in to introduce him to my band.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going around and going, and this is Larry Lynch on drums and this is Gary Phillips, and this is Steve Wright. He's our bass player. He goes, Steve Wright, University of Miami, 1972. Lineman of the year. You had it all. First round draft choice by the Packers, but you blew it, young man. You blew it. Why did you blow it, Stevie? Why? And I go, Harry, wrong Steve Wright.
Good guy.
Oh, never mind. He was just the best. Like, we'd be eating. The crew, they had a catered meal, uh-huh. which he did this running dialogue all day long.
Pastrami.
Pastrami. These Brussels sprouts. Oh, my God. Where did you get these? These are not known in nature. Or somebody would push somebody in the hallway and go, pugilism 101. Stand toe-to-toe with your opponent. He was just the best, and I spent the whole week with Howard, and I loved it.
And did you converse with him, or were you just sitting there drinking, watching TV?
I conversed with him.
Okay,
we talked
cool.
a lot. You know, we talked about the guy that made Spinal Tap.
Rob Reiner.
Rob Reiner, right. The Meathead.
Yeah,
Meathead. Had dropped by the set one day, and, you know, he was palling around with Billy Crystal and all the people that were on the show.
That was the Christopher Guest.
Christopher Guest.
Harry and
Michael McKean maybe was in there.
Michael McKean. Yeah. And who was the guy that did...
Martin Short?
the real spastic guy.
Yeah, Martin Short, right?
Ed Grimley.
Ed Grimley. Okay. That's who I'm thinking of. There was a wonderful Ed Grimley, and Howard Cosell was Ed Grimley's father.
I remember that.
And they would stay, and they'd put their makeup on, and they'd stay in character for 4 or 5 hours. You know, go over the sketch 2 or 3 times. Then you'd see him hanging around the Coke machine. And he was like, I must say.
Most decent.
Yeah, and Howard was the best. I had a great time. And what did we talk? Oh, Rob Reiner popped by. I guess he knew them or... Then he introduced me, and we were talking about Spinal Tap. It was like my favorite movie at the time. So
that's
great.
Wow.
Great.
Too much. That's fun. He's from an era when like intelligence and being erudite was valued, you know, yeah. Howard. But that's not how it is anymore so much. Yeah.
And I just have to say, when you're on Saturday Night Live, I want to say the album title that you were promoting at that time. Citizen Kin.
Yes.
Citizen Kin.
Another thing.
You know, we actually got to do 2 songs on the show, but when they aired it, they cut one of the songs.
Really?
Yeah, you did Lucky and Boys Won't.
Yeah, and they cut Boys Won't, I think,
That's
which was our
tune.
Next single. You do your current single and your next single, and they have a rule on Saturday Night Live that you have to use the same people that were on the record. So whenever you see a band and they got, you know, background singers and cello players and stuff, those are the people that were on the record. And they have to sign a waiver.
Wow.
It says it's the exact same people that were on the record, which was cool for us because we had legendary sax player Steve Douglas, the guy from, all the Phil Spector stuff. We had him fly out and blow the solo. That was great because he's the guy that did it.
Good for you guys and good for him.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, there's another rule that you probably won't know unless you're a band on Saturday Night Live, but it was instituted the week before we got there.
Okay.
They used to, you rehearsed all week. And then on Friday or Saturday, you did 3 shows. You did an afternoon, like a run through, and then you taped a show.
Yeah.
And then you taped another show. And they took what was best from the 2 shows.
Okay.
So I don't know how we were in our dressing room and we got done our run through. It was like, yeah, well, we're going to step out. We'll be back in an hour. You know, just walk around the neighborhood. No, you can't leave the building.
Ooh.
Why not? Why can't we leave the building? Well, we don't really want to point fingers. I got the guy to tell me. The Thompson twins had been on the week before. And their run-through was fabulous. Oh, everybody said, that's going to be the best musical guest. Then they went out and scored some heroin.
Oh, no.
And they came back to the studio like 20 minutes before the show, like...
The Thompson twins.
Catatonic.
Rules. Fucking Thompson twins ruining it for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and then I was like, hey, look, we don't want to do hard. We're just going to smoke a joint. Is it okay if we go out? No. They want to let you go. Anyways, because of the Thompson twins, and if you'll go back and look at their performance, it is sort of semi-catatonic. But that became the rule of thumb, and now they don't let the bands.
That is amazing.
And I would imagine that it wasn't just the Thompson twins that... Perhaps there were others before them.
Now, we talked about Jeopardy. Weird Al calls you up.
Oh, yeah.
Good man. And you jump right on that.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of artists won't do it.
Yeah, you know, I asked him who turned him down. Mm-hmm. I said, well, who in the world would turn you down? Because it's such a great deal.
Yeah.
You get half the money.
Right.
He goes on the road, you get half the money.
Right.
It's like mailbox money in its most pure form, where you don't do anything except go to the mailbox.
And what I really love is you're also in the video.
Yes, that was a wonderful thing. And when he called me, you know, he's got to get permission.
Great guy, too.
Great guy. Yeah. Funny guy, nice guy. And, you know, I mean, I loved his stuff. So I said, yeah, I'd be real flattered.
Yeah.
I consider it flattering when somebody parodies you. It means that you're well enough known to be parodied.
Exactly.
And of course, his version was fabulous.
It is.
And
then
he invited me to come up and do a cameo in the video. I got to meet, the announcer guy.
Don Pardo.
I got to meet. Don, tell him what you would have won, Greg. That was wonderful. And we hung out and had lunch together with Don Pardo. Highlight of my career.
That's great.
I can tell you.
The song is I Lost on Jeopardy, if anyone doesn't know.
Right. He told me no one's ever turned him down except Prince.
Wow.
No sense of humor.
No sense of humor. He said, look, he wanted to do a Purple Rain parody. Turned him down flat. Now, he said, Michael Jackson loved him, would call him up in the middle of the night with ideas. Hey, how about Eat It? How about that one, huh? How about that one? And he would call him up. We would, you know, like, let's do another one. And Prince, no go.
I'll tell you who was incensed and just furious about the I Lost on Jeopardy was my friend Big Ed Vara. Because he...
What the hell's wrong with that guy?
He wrote... On this album, there's a song, Girl Most Likely.
Yes.
He wrote a parody called Girl Most Likely Not to Conceive. and he said, that was my idea to do Great Kid parodies, and this guy stole it. Like... Okay, hey, first of all,
does your friend have a career in doing song parodies?
Not at all.
That might be the problem, Gary.
Yeah, there's a parody house somewhere in Chicago where you just send in. You know, I have been ripped 17. Well, you know, I've been around for how many years? A million years. I started in the. You know, we were steam powered when we started. That's how old the band is. And I've been parodied a gazillion times. I mean, the breakup song was the wake up song, the shake up song. I mean, you know, Jeopardy was 15 million. There were several versions of rap versions of Jeopardy.
Wow. Really?
Oh, and they were big hits in Europe. And one was by this French guy that was really bizarre. Wow. It was very bizarre. Black French guy. Hmm. Talk like the Uncola guy, you know? Yeah. and the whole thing with a Jeopardy, they give it this I love in Jeopardy, yeah. In Jeopardy, yeah.
Because that was kind of the.
And then the guy would say, "Don't forget me. I'm Dr. B. I'm not forgetting you, dude. That's all he said too. Like 5 minutes later, don't forget me. I'm Dr. B.
Well, he has to keep saying it so you won't forget him.
Okay. I got
to
take that up.
We didn't. Who's he? Dr. B. That's me.
Because that was kind of a departure for you. That song had a little more of a like a disco beat or something like that. So it kind of lent itself.
We were out to make money.
Everybody did it.
Yeah.
You know, it was fashionable. After the Stones did Miss You, it was okay, you know. Yep.
Are doing it,
yeah. Hey, look,
that paves the way for everyone to do it. Yeah.
I believe Jeopardy was actually sold more records than the breakup song and lasted longer and was an international hit because you could walk into discos in Munich and hear it.
Right.
So that was kind of cool.
I wanted to play a track and I wanted to ask you, you recorded one of my favorite Springsteen songs, which is For You.
Yeah.
Are you a big Bruce fan, obviously?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. Yeah, and you know, in the early days, nobody had covered him. In fact, there was only one cover, and I think it was Fire by the Pointer Sisters.
Yeah.
So I was second. And we had done it. It was off of Asbury Park, New Jersey,
right,
which is an album everybody kind of overlooked.
It's a great album.
Love the album. Yeah. I saw Bruce do a showcase set at the Troubadour as an acoustic act before that album came out.
And the Troubadour is about as big as the room we're in right now. So that's pretty amazing.
And he just got out there with his acoustic and he did like the whole album just acoustic. And it was fabulous. And you could tell the guy was, you know, special.
Had something.
And I did For You. We just kind of messed around with it. I saw it as a... like a Birds arrangement. Uh-huh. Like you were taking the old Rickenbacker 12-string and doing a little jingle jangle bits, just like the Birds did with Tambourine Man and Turn, Turn, and Turn. And it was real. I was playing the 12-string Rickenbacker at the time, so we were jingle jangling all the way to the bank. and he loved my version, and he started doing my version live. I saw him over here at Winterland, and then he actually said my name. I'm going to do Greg Kinn's version. Everybody went, no, please don't! I was really happy. Now, I was the only guy, besides his mother and his sister, to be allowed backstage at Winterland.
Oh, that's,
no kidding.
That's only awesome.
And it was like, did you do
blow with his mom?
No, but we did shots of tequila.
Okay, there you go. All right.
There was a guy at the back door, guarding Bruce's dressing room.
Okay.
He was a big dude, used to be the bouncer at the Keystone Berkeley. A guy, I'd removed the thorn from his paw once back in the 60s. And his name is Tiny, of course.
Yes.
And he goes, "Hey, Greg, get your ass in here. Come on now." And he grabs me and his mom and his sister shoves us in the door. It's like movie stars and people from Rolling Stone are waiting in the hallway. I breeze in there with, you know, the guy.
Nice.
So I go in there and Bruce, very cordial. Yeah. And, of course, I got his mom with him and his sister.
Right.
Pulls me to the side and he goes, "Hey, man, could you stay away from my sister?" Sure, Bruce, no problem. So we had shots of tequila. Yeah. We were hanging out. They had to do an interview for 60 minutes, and Ed Bradley walked in.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, I'm going to witness this whole thing? I'm just a schlub sitting here? He was one of the nicest guys in the world, and every time I saw him afterwards, like when he gave me Rendezvous,
he gave
it to me backstage at the Roxy. Here's a guy like Springsteen. He shows up at the Roxy. He's already famous.
Right.
Like Born to Run had just come out. And he walks in, no entourage, no road manager. He's by himself. He's in a rented Corvette that he rented at the airport. He parks in front of the building and walks in. And he walks through, and he sits down at a table right in front with this other couple that went. And for the whole show, they're sitting there with Springsteen.
Wow,
and he's
amazing.
Like, he was a he was like going like this. And after the show was over, we were all backstage jamming, doing old Beatles songs and stuff.
Wow.
And I forget, there was a punchline to this, but I forgot.
give us a taste of it.
I want to play a little of your version of For You.
Still sounds fresh.
Sounds beautiful.
Yeah, I remember we did that in one take.
Wow.
I remember
wow.
the one take because I had the flu, and mm-hmm. I thought I'd have to sing it a couple of times. And the
wait
the,
a minute, I got an out. I had the flu, the flu. I had the flu. We got to call Weird Al up. Let's do this. Now, I just want to say, Greg, that's remastered on iTunes from the album Greg Kinnegan. So
yes.
People
and
go
you
buy
can,
that.
You can buy that. I believe it's on the Greatest Hits.
It's on
as
the
well.
the Greatest Hits. Which
Best
Joel
is Berkeley.
Yep, he's holding up 75 to 84.
Yeah, and then and we've been releasing each album digitally one per month, and we just got Rock and Roll. So there's still
Continued Conspiracy, Contagious.
18 of them, I think, total. There was a lot.
Are you guys doing it one per month, or is it just whenever? Okay, that's
one
awesome.
One per month, original artwork. It's really a gas. I'm going to rehearse with a band and learn some of these old tunes again.
Nice.
So we could, you know.
Are you going to play around?
Yeah, we're going to.
Excellent.
That's the other bit of news. You know, I've been rehearsing with the band. And we're working on material.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to be probably hitting the road, may do a proper tour this summer.
Oh, that would be excellent.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'd love that. It's been a long time since I did that.
I know. We're glad to get a taste of it right here today.
So
and also, Greg and Joel brought along two copies of the Greatest Hits that I hope Greg will sign. We'll give them to the listeners.
No, those are $29.99
apiece.
Oh,
well.
We'll talk about it. That's fine.
Oh,
but,
we would figured we'd sell them to you guys. No, why don't we give them away to the smartest person that calls in?
Okay. Well, will I write a review on iTunes? That's how we usually give away.
Yeah, write a review of this episode on iTunes,
yeah.
And then you'll get a copy of the CD, and we also have a DVD,
that's
too.
Yeah, you know, yes. It'd be a lucky winner, and it's good stuff. And if you don't win, you should check it out because this is like it's an amazing career. It's
amazing
catalog.
Stuff. Yeah, I mean,
and
I love it.
Yeah, you like know some of the songs, and you'll discover some great songs.
That's exactly right.
You know, that's so weird because my wife, who's somewhat younger than I, That was you? I got in my garage. I've got 8-tracks. I got a box of 8-tracks on my first album. Okay, what are those? Oh, these. You don't want to know. Anyway, I got 45s. I got labels. She's never. You know. So I'll be in the car and I got my iPod with every known Greg Kinn song on it. And something like Reunited will come up. Yeah. And she'll go, did you do that? Was that you? And then I started copping everything. Yeah, you know that Bon Jovi song that you just heard?
That was me.
I always like when guys impersonate their wives because you just don't make her sound young. Now you make her sound crazy. I know. Or you do the Edith Bunker. What did you sing that one? Greg, this has been phenomenal for you to be here today.
Oh, I got you. Pat, I grew up in the Bay Area. As a rock fan, listening, and I was, like in high school, too young to get into shows.
Right.
You came and did a matinee at the Saddle Rack in San Jose.
I remember that.
Unbelievable. Like, me and my friends, we took the bus down. It was just life-changing. It was so unbelievable.
Well, when we were planning doing the show, we said we should get a guest. And Gary sends me an email, and he says, hey, I was thinking about getting this guy. And I email back, and I go, well, I was going to try to get Greg Kinn. And Gary says, screw my guess. Try to get Greg Kinn. Greg Kinn.
We used to play right down on this block at a place called the Old Waldorf.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it became the Punchline after it was the Old Waldorf. I remember playing there, get this, with AC/DC on their first tour.
Wow.
And that was a mostly glass club. They shattered many a window and many a champagne glass. Chicks didn't like AC/DC.
AC/DC and Rush are not chick bands.
No, you go backstage, it was a bunch of dudes like you.
Man, T-shirts.
Yeah, T-shirts.
Dirty guys.
Yeah, hey, I'm into Anthrax, man. But I remember playing there with lots of great bands, and it was a wonderful club. Did you ever play there when it was a Punchline?
No, I never did.
I saw many comedy shows there right across the street. Yeah, just amazing. And so you have the albums are coming out monthly. When does the Revolver book hit the streets?
Rubber Soul.
I'm sorry.
It's September 3rd, Premier Digital Press. I'm going to do the audio book for it shortly thereafter.
After you learn that Liverpoolian accent.
Yeah, I don't.
Just watch Hard Day's Night a few times.
That was my primer. Day's Night.
Oh, cool. There you go.
So anyway. So that's coming out September 3rd. We will be playing around, so keep an eye out. And you never know when I'm going to puck back on the radio. Pack buck on the radio.
One more thing. I posted on our Facebook page today that we were having a rocker from San Francisco on, and a guy named P.F. Wilson guessed it, and I said, remove that post. I want it to be a surprise. Yeah. But P.F. then sent me.
He should win the CD.
Okay. P.F. Wilson's getting one of the CDs.
All right.
Done deal.
Wasn't that the original drummer for Procol Harum, P.F. Wilson?
P.F. Wilson. First round draft. Okay. But P.F. Wilson, he sent me a message. He said, Rock Solid is one of my immediate listen podcasts. Beautiful. So we thank you for that, P.F. And also, Greg, I wanted to ask you, would you mind playing us out with one more tune?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Nice. Everybody, like us on Facebook. Write a nice review.
Here
Greg Kinn, thank you so much.
Thanks,
Joel,
man.
Skyler's here.
Well, I'm a Madison Avenue man, and I can make your fantasies part of my plans. I say, Madison Avenue man.
Everybody.